This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. Here in the nation's capital, downtown D.C. has been turned into a fortress yet again. Now the authorities will start the week taking down fences put up ahead of this weekend's Justice for J6 rally. Though the word rally really might be overstating the gathering. Few turned up. Police and the press outnumbered protesters who traveled to D.C. to highlight the plight of those charged with nonviolent crimes in the January 6th insurrection. One man showed up in a Batman costume. A few expected large crowds. Even some of those now behind bars didn't expect much of anything.
I wish it weren't a big deal, but I don't see anybody. Nobody cares. You know, they're trying to make this thing up to be something bigger than what it was. Now, if the president said, soon to be president, Mr. Trump said, hey, go to the Capitol again, there might be a large movement going that way.
That's Landon Copeland, an Iraq War veteran from Utah and a defendant in the January 6th insurrection. He wasn't here this weekend because he's being detained while awaiting trial, but he has been speaking to my next guest. Scott McFarlane is NBC4's Washington investigative reporter based here in the nation's capital. Scott, welcome back.
Jen, good to be here.
So I want to get back in a moment to your conversation with Landon, but first, a quick word about what didn't happen this weekend. What did the crowd look like?
About 450 people inside the barricaded space, protest space outside the Capitol. That's what police expected, but it's far from what I think some of these jailed defendants and some of these organizers of the rally were hoping for. I mean, these were people wildly outnumbered by law enforcement and by members of the media. Four arrests so far. We have this from U.S. Capitol Police. One person for having a knife in restricted space, one person, a man from Toms River, New Jersey, for having a gun in restricted space, and two others, a man from Lubbock, Texas, and a woman from Winchester, Virginia, for having outstanding warrants on unrelated cases. Those, Jen, are rather garden variety arrests for Capitol Police in any given week. Mm.
Did officers have concerns ahead of this event?
Rank and file officers truly had concerns, not worried about the size of the crowd. They were worried about the potential ferocity of the crowd, the tenor of the crowd. But what's more, a lot of the police I talked to are just concerned about the trauma being relived or re-aggravated, the trauma they experienced in January, facing those same types of protests, hearing those same types of words. There's a real morale issue, as one might expect after such a traumatic event. And police say re-erecting those fences, being out there all hands on deck, doesn't really help matters.
Well, let's get back to your recent conversation with Landon. What can you tell us about him and the charges he faces and where he's being held right now?
So he's one of the jailed defendants. He's one of the people for whom these protesters were here in D.C. on Saturday. He has been held at a local jail in Utah where inmates have phone privileges. So we've spoken several times. He's being transferred at some point in the coming days to the Washington, D.C. jail because his case, like all these cases, is going to be happening in the Washington, D.C. federal court. He'll join a few dozen other inmates who are being held pre-trial. Copeland's case is distinctive for a couple reasons. Now, he's one of this growing number of defendants who have military ties. He's a U.S. Army veteran, did two tours overseas. He says he won a number of medals. Copeland is one of dozens who's accused of assaulting police. But unlike everybody else, Jen, he's openly and freely talking about his case pre-trial. Just Friday, he pleaded not guilty in his case to multiple federal charges, including assault against police. But in his conversations with me, he's unequivocal. He doesn't think he did anything wrong. He thinks police were the aggravators and those who were acting violently and that he was there to protect others. What's more, he says the crowd had a right to be there because, in his words, Donald Trump sent them. Never mind the separation of powers issues there, but this is a defendant, perhaps not the only one, who thinks Trump's coming back to power before the next election.
Well, right. In that first clip we heard, people would have heard him say soon to be President Trump. And you asked him if he really believed Donald Trump would be returning to office as president. Let's listen.
Absolutely. And people from all sides recognize that man's ability to negotiate.
How is that going to happen? Possibly, conceivably.
Well, if he was able to speak on a public platform again, then it would absolutely happen. The guy's a wonderful public speaker, and he says things like he means it. I would say that the guy did more for both sides of the aisle than what people even give him credit for.
Now, you sounded a little incredulous there, Scott, but, I mean, what was your reaction to him?
Well, I tried to mute my incredulity as best I could because, these phone calls go on at his convenience, and I wanted to hear more of what he had to say. But he's repeated that multiple times, that Trump directed the crowd, that Trump gives license to the crowd to do what they did. We'll see if that becomes an issue that defendants raise at trial when trials happen. But trials are still weeks, if not months off, in even the earliest cases. But what's more, Trump's words, his continuing denialism of the 2020 election, his continued baseless allegations about the 2020 election, is actually making life more difficult for the defendants who are being charged in these cases. There are defendants, Jen, who want to get out of jail pre-trial, and in multiple occasions, the judge has cited Donald Trump's words as a potential danger for these defendants, maybe provoking them to commit other alleged acts. So Donald Trump's a complicating factor in these cases, not a simplifying one.
It's interesting because you said Landon Copeland doesn't see what he is alleged to have done on January 6th as being violent. And people behind the rally over the weekend also saying these weren't violent acts. I'm trying to connect the dots here because if anyone watches the videos, it's very clear that there was violence happening on that day. Where is the disconnect?
Well, in his case, he's arguing that his movements and his contact with police, his physical contact with police, is justified because he says police were aggressors. In other cases, you're going to see defendants make arguments that they were defending themselves, protecting themselves in a mob, in a scrum. But all these defenses are complicated for the reason you just mentioned, Jen. There is voluminous video evidence. And when I say voluminous, there are thousands of hours of surveillance video, thousands of hours of body-worn camera videos the prosecutors are readying for defense lawyers to look at. And that's actually a complicating factor. There's so much video, it's going to stall some of these prosecutions or some of these trials. Because just think about it. If there are thousands of hours of videos to review, if you sit down to do it, it's going to take you hundreds of days. It's just simple math. That's why trial dates are now 2022, and I wouldn't be surprised to start hearing dates that go into 2023.
How many of these defendants are choosing to act as their own defense attorneys?
Oh, there are a couple of them. And we note these because the proceedings get particularly colorful. There is one defendant from Pennsylvania who at one point told the court she was a sovereign citizen and not subject to the court's authority. And her case has been complicated because there's been a number of disruptions in her case. She's defending herself and the proceedings go off the rails. In fact, just last week, a judge ordered her jailed pre-trial. This is a defendant facing only misdemeanor counts, likely not even facing the prospect of a prison sentence if convicted. She's in jail as she defends herself, in part because of her conduct in the court and because the court says she's not adhering to court restrictions. There's another defendant who has argued he wants to defend himself, but has a fee structure he told the court about, that he charges $75,000 an hour for court appearances and that he charges $50 million for giving specimens, like urine specimens, to the court in his case. And the judge has rejected his fee structure, but is allowing him to defend himself. And one last one, Jen, there's a defendant who's in jail pre-trial, eager to get a plea deal, he says, and wants to defend himself, he says, because he wants to expedite the plea deal. The judge is trying to advise him against that. But these are just some of the cases so far in which defendants want to defend themselves.
You've been keeping a close eye on travel requests that have been made by various defendants. Can you give us some context here?
Yeah, there are a number of defendants who are released from jail pre-trial, and they have some release conditions under which they have to, adhere to because the court wants to monitor their movements. But some of these defendants wanted to take summer vacations. They wanted to go to the beach with their family. They wanted to go on a camping trip with their sons. And in one request that came in over the weekend, there's a defendant who wants to go to a Pittsburgh Steelers game, October 10th, the Steelers-Broncos game in Pittsburgh. And according to the court filings, the prosecutors are not objecting. I talked to a former federal prosecutor who says a pretrial release, before your case has been adjudicated, before you've pleaded guilty to or been convicted of anything, the courts don't want to restrict you any more than they have to because they don't want to penalize you for things you have yet to be convicted of. So that's why we see these requests. And most of the time, these requests are accepted and allowed.
Hmm. Well, where do things stand with the number of people charged overall at this point?
My latest count is 607 cases so far. Could be dozens, if not hundreds more to come. About 70, a little more than 10%, have reached plea agreements. There's a long road ahead of us.
We're talking to Scott McFarlane. He's NBC4's Washington investigative reporter based here in the nation's capital. We'll have more with him and you in a moment. I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR. I'm Jen White. This is 1A. We're talking to NBC4's Washington investigative reporter Scott McFarlane about the latest on those charged in the January 6th insurrection. Now, Scott, you were talking about the amount of evidence that needs to be sifted. Are the staffing levels where they need to be to get that done?
Defense lawyers would argue no. Prosecutors would argue we're getting close. It's not just the thousands of hours of videos I referenced earlier. There are phone devices, hundreds of them, that need forensic review. And best as we can tell from listening to the court proceedings, that's not a fast or easy process. There's witness testimony. And there are tips, and I mean tips, Jen. 250,000 tips received as of months ago. So that might be a low number. More tips are coming in. Not only do prosecutors have to ready all that for trial, prepare all that for each individual case, they're bound by law to provide that to defense lawyers in advance of trial so they can prepare exculpatory information, exculpatory evidence, so that they're ready for trial. So we've heard some heartburn vocalized by judges already about being ready for trial and some of the dates that have been set so far. In the largest case, the accused Oath Keepers case, the accused far-right group members accused of conspiracy and plotting, there are nearly 24 defendants, and the aim is to have that trial, at least part of it, begin in January. That would be a Herculean task, not just because of the number of defendants, not just because of the backlogs in the court system due to COVID, but because of the evidence and getting it ready for all involved.
Well, I want to turn back to this weekend for a moment. You're here in D.C., and I'm curious, what's your sense of where law enforcement is right now? How tenable is it to put up these huge fences every time, you know, there's an announcement that there's going to be another rally?
Well, the money's there now. The money for the fencing and the money to have all hands on deck has been approved. I mean, they did pass legislation to robustly fund Capitol Police moving forward, knowing or at least sensing that more of these days were going to happen. But the endurance is what I question. Does the police department have the endurance to go through this frequently, if this happens frequently? Again, you've got rank and file members who are mentally, if not physically, exhausted from a hellish year. They're being told, cancel your vacations because this J6 rally is happening, all hands on deck, and you're going to face off with people who may be taunting and shouting at you again. How long is that going to be there? I mean, the union has warned formally that there's a retirement bubble happening at U.S. Capitol Police, or it's looming and could strike at any time, or could, I guess, burst at any time. And recruitment of police is a challenge nationwide. No matter where you live, your local police department could be facing troubles recruiting because there's only so many candidates and there's an awful lot of vacancies. So in the long term, the long view, Jen, there's concern that this police department could be exhausted if this happens frequently.
Well, piles of evidence to go through, continuing investigations, trials may be starting next year. What are you looking out for next as the investigation moves ahead?
Plea deals in the mid-tier cases. There are three different tiers I sense here, Jen. There's the misdemeanor cases, those who not accused of assault or damaging anything, just unlawfully being on the grounds and unlawfully picketing and parading. We're seeing plea deals. We're seeing sentences. Few, if any of them, are serving even jail time, much less prison time. There's the high tier cases, those extreme groups, those alleged conspirators, those accused of the real violent assaults that day. We'll see when the plea deals begin there. But it's the middle ground. That's particularly interesting. Those accused of lower level assaults, maybe assaults that didn't injure someone, of damaging property, of going in the real sensitive areas, like the Senate chamber. Those are the cases where plea agreements are coming in the coming weeks. Let's see what the judges do. Do they exert some judicial force here? Do they go above and beyond what the prosecutors ask for when sentencing comes down? If so, that's a roadmap for where the big cases are headed in 2022.
That's Scott McFarlane. He's NBC4's Washington investigative reporter based here in the nation's capital. Scott, we appreciate your time again. Thanks.
Anytime.